So this morning on The Takeaway, a question. Where do we go? Our look at the policy in transition with global implications. And we're going to Afghanistan this morning. It's a look at that country and that region all week long. Joining us is Craig Mullaney, former captain in the U.S. Army in Afghanistan, a national security advisor during the Obama campaign, and author of the book The Unforgiving Minute. He joins us from Washington, D.C. Craig Mullaney, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Good morning, John.
As a West Pointer and someone who I think fairly represents the troops who will both be going over there as trainers and will be responsible for the tactics on the ground as well as implementing the policy in the broadest terms, having Barack Obama on Friday with his entire security team outlining this new policy, is that a message for them as well as anyone else who might be concerned in the sort of diplomatic realm in South Asia?
I think it's clearly a message to the American troops, and the symbolism of having all these different elements of American government together in the room matters, because moving forward in Afghanistan, it has to be approached comprehensively and with a multi-pronged strategy that includes not just security, largely provided by the military, but also regional diplomatic outreach and sort of on-the-ground, muddy boots, diplomatic and civilian work.
Now, you know, during the campaign, Afghanistan, or beefing up our policy in Afghanistan, or shifting our focus back to Afghanistan, some of the language that was used during the campaign was a euphemism for getting Osama bin Laden. But that really wasn't what came out of the Friday briefing. What is the mission exactly?
Well, I mean, I don't think the campaign rhetoric was a guise for anything other than what it said. Which was, I think, President Obama's sincere focus on making Afghanistan right. And the focus of the strategy is on disrupting, defeating, and dismantling al-Qaeda. But it recognizes that you can't get from here to there without sort of drying up the support for al-Qaeda and for extremism in parts of Afghanistan and also Pakistan threatened by the Taliban.
Now, the Pakistan policy and the references to Pakistan in the speech on Friday were many. And I'm wondering if it's fair to say that Pakistan is at the center of this policy, really. And if so, what are the quid pro quos? What are the levers to pull in Pakistan, the civilian government of which is at least as concerned about India as it is about the Taliban?
There's a few. I mean, one sort of going directly to the Pakistani people, and that's, I think, the signal of tripling non-military assistance to Pakistan over a five-year period is sending a very strong signal to the Pakistani people. One of the greatest success stories of the Bush administration was our response to the Kashmir earthquake in 2005. And for a relatively small investment, one-tenth of the investment in Pakistan's military capability, we doubled support for the United States within Pakistan.
Although, Craig, the other example there would be billions that went to fund the Mujahideen during the Reagan era when the fight was against the Soviets in Afghanistan, and that aid went to forces that ultimately were destabilizing.
No, you're absolutely right, and that's the challenge in working with the Pakistani military, elements of which have clearly not been supportive of American policy and in some cases stated Pakistani policy. And I think it's time now for the double game to stop. And you know the devil's in the details of how you do that, but I'd expect President Obama to not have a sort of a blank, he's not giving a blank check to the Pakistani government.
Well, he sort of referred to that specifically. Let's listen in Obama's own voice on Face the Nation yesterday.
We have to recognize that part of our task in working with Pakistan is not just military. It's also our capacity to build their capacity through civilian interventions, through development, through aid assistance. And that's part of what you're seeing both in Afghanistan and Pakistan, I think, is fully resourcing a comprehensive strategy that doesn't just rely on bullets or bombs, but also relies on agricultural specialists, on doctors, on engineers.
Craig Mullaney, it also relies on diplomats, and in some sense it relies on Iran, which may be a partner here, tacitly or otherwise. What is the likelihood of that partnership being as broad as Obama envisions?
I'm not sure what the extent of the relationship with Iran will be, but there's certainly a couple of key areas that you would want. You may look for cooperation. One is in the transit of logistical supplies into Afghanistan, given how much more difficult it's become to get supplies through through the Khyber Pass in Pakistan. And then the second area is Iran and Afghanistan share the threat of opium production. Iran does not want illegal narcotics transiting its territory. And there could be some very effective intelligence sharing of the kind that existed immediately after we invaded Afghanistan in 2001.
Craig, how confident are you, and of course with your eyes on the ground there, you understand the sort of nuances that separate the Taliban in Pakistan from the Taliban inside Afghanistan. Does the Obama administration have that clear in mind? And, you know, we should remind people that General Petraeus, of course, at the head of SEDCOM, is running the tactical operation here.
I'll say it can be very difficult on the ground to understand exactly who it is you're fighting, whether they're Afghani Taliban, Pakistani Taliban, or al-Qaeda. There's no distinguishing marks on the uniform. Our intelligence is still very grainy. And Admiral Blair, the Director of National Intelligence, said as much last week. But I think there may be some ways to cause some fractures in the alliance of convenience. And I think that's one of the things you'll look at, we'll be looking at.
When you say alliance of convenience, elaborate on that. What are you talking about?
Well, certain elements of this, say the Pakistani Taliban, and say they're focused on establishing sort of a zone of control within Pakistan that's not within the Pakistani state's power, where their focus might not be on the other side of the border in Afghanistan. And the Afghanistan Taliban, which doesn't particularly care about the government in Pakistan, but wants to reestablish the Islamic Emirate in Afghanistan that existed from 96 to 2001.
So the complicated set of sort of convenient relationships constitute something of a toe popper if you don't really know what you're doing as you get in there.
And there's more. I mean, there's the Haqqani network, there's Hekmatyar, there are a number of bad actors in that region.
Well, all complicating the question of where do we go from here. We're going to leave it there. But Craig Mullaney, thanks so much for joining us. Craig Mullaney is a former captain in the U.S. Army in Afghanistan, national security advisor during the Obama campaign, and author of the extraordinary book, The Unforgiving Minute. Craig, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Today, GM's Rick Wagoner steps down as the head of the troubled automaker. So it's time for a job interview, folks. If you had the job, how would you save GM? Here's what John said.
How would I save Detroit? I'd make a product people wanted to buy and not tell them what to buy. I'd listen to what they were saying and the rest of the world was saying and then create a product that everybody wanted. It's pretty simple.
Customers always right. Find some auto customers, though. What would you invest in at GM? What would you shutter? What would you even want? Would you even want this job to begin with? Your take at 877-8-MY-TAKE. And your takeaway?
This is going to be G20 week. This is going to be the big story of the week. But also what we're going to see here is kind of Barack Obama's popularity. He's more popular than all his other G20 heads of state versus America's lack of popularity.
Marcus Mabry from our partner, The New York Times, talking about G20 week on the agenda. I'm John Huckenberry. This is The Takeaway.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.